morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to this, page 8 of the Interop Hot Stage Diaries. I'm Kurt Franklin, your host for Interop Radio and the Hot Stage Diaries. We have a great show for you today. You know, it may just be me, but I think these shows are getting better and better as we go along. We have no shortage of really interesting people here at Hot Stage. No shortage of interesting things going on here at Hot Stage. And the combination, well, like I said, I may be a little bit biased, but I think it makes for some great radio. Now, part of great radio today is our in-studio guest. We have with us Tim Titus, the CTO of Path Solutions. Tim, welcome to the Hot Stage Diaries.
Thank you, Curtis.
Now, Tim has spoken with us before on recording, and he's going to be a guest on a regular episode of Interop Radio coming up in a couple of weeks. That's our April 14th episode, so you're going to want to be back for that. But in the meantime, he's agreed to join us for this episode. And Tim, let me ask you, from what you've been seeing, what do you think of Hot Stage so far?
It's actually, everything's on track. Everything's looking really good. We've kind of entered a really neat phase right now in Hot Stage where the network is mostly built. Everything is connected, and we're doing what we call, or we refer to as, pre-troubleshooting. And pre-troubleshooting is finding all of the problems before it actually goes live for the show. So it's kind of a neat phase where we're able to uncover a lot of bugs and weirdness and just little glitches and hiccups that we can't really have in a live show network. And so it's kind of a fun time where we're able to find this stuff and work with the teams and get the stuff battened down and ready to go for the show.
Well, I was going to say, the pre-troubleshootings has a very Minority Report sound to it, you know, where you can look at a box and say, I don't like the looks of you, and go ahead and send it off to network appliance jail before it causes any harm. And is that the right basic idea?
Actually, yeah, that is kind of the right basic idea. In one sense, if you knew what the box would complain about because of certain configurations, or I should say misconfigurations, you can exactly take that on and say, let's put these guys in jail before they become troublemakers.
Now, I don't want to shatter anyone's illusions, but the fact is I look around Hot Stage, and I'm not sure we have a real Tom Cruise kind of character here. But still, you know, if the idea of a bunch of folks running around in hoodies and cargo shorts is your cup of tea, then this is a very hot place these days.
Yeah, I find it amazing as every year you have the latest and greatest technology brought into play by all of these different players. They mash it all together in, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks. And, gee, everything ends up working by hook or by crook. Sometimes there's some late nights by certain team members just to make sure everything's operational. But it's always amazing to see the technology come together and to see how things change from year to year.
All right. Now, we have a question from our chat room. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But you were talking about all those very smart, very capable people who are wandering around here. I had a chance to talk to one of those, actually from one of the companies that's taking part in the InteropNet, and let's meet him. This is Jeff Blyther of Lantronics.
Sure, my name is Jeff Blyther. I work for Lantronics, and I'm what you call a senior field applications engineer. So that kind of encompasses what most of the folks are here, being system administrators. As well as Lantronics also has products that create serial to Ethernet connectivity at the embedded level. So these are devices that are actually put on a PCB board and then allowed for connectivity out. So that requires a little bit more of different skill sets beyond maybe being a system administrator. So they call them field application engineers or solution engineers, and so that's what I do for Lantronics. So Lantronics has three product lines, one of them being ITM or IT management solutions. We have KVM over IP solutions. We have what we call our console manager. So this is console level access to the various equipment here at HotStage or at Interop. And we also have what we call the SLB, which is console management and power management over IP. That kind of a product would be best suited in a branch office or small data center type environment. As well as we have an aggregation piece of software, a VM version of software called the SLM. And this aggregates all these connections into one single point, single pane of glass kind of solution to get access to the various devices. So here at Interop, we are showing our brand new SLC-8000 console manager. It's got a modular port design in the back, so it has RJ45 serial ports to connect to consoles. And those can be slid out by 16 at a time. So a 16-port module slides out, and then you can then slide in USB. Many of the vendors here now offer USB as console-level access. So we can go natively from USB to USB. We are also outfitting just about all the servers, the storage devices, and the VM servers with KVM over IP. This allows keyboard, video, and mouse or desktop control remotely to these devices. So that's what we're doing here at Interop. So Lantronics has been to Interop. We've walked the show. We've had a booth. We were in New York last year. And starting last year, we were given the opportunity to be part of the SDN lab environment. And so we said, yes, we'd love to be a part. So this is actually our first year here at the HotStage. It's been a lot of fun. A little bit overwhelming. It's amazing what's going on here and all the activity. A little bit what I expected, a little bit what I didn't expect. Lots of long hours, but it's a very cohesive, collaborative effort. Everybody's been right on top of things and, you know, very helpful and very personable. And so far the experience has been really nice. Well, I would say working with the team here, everybody, again, is very cooperative, very personable, and we're all out to do the same thing, and that is to create an environment that's, used for all the demoing and to show floor attendees what's going on here at Interop. And everybody's after that same objective, so it's really been a lot of fun to actually put this together and make it hum.
That was Jeff Blyther from Lantronics. Now, we will have more from Jeff a little bit later on in the program. But before we get to that, Tim, we've had a question in the chat room that runs here on Blog Talk Radio during the live broadcast of the Hot Stage Diaries. When we were talking about the pre-troubleshooting that you were doing, I had a question. Do you have people who try to break things? Is that how you do the troubleshooting? You just sit down a bunch of people who play the role of bad user and have them see if they can break the system?
Well, I'm going to say yes. There's really two parts to doing pre-troubleshooting. The first part is if we're able to detect that there's just a problem with the configuration of the network the way it is without anyone attempting to break it. For example, we found a device that had a memory leak, and what probably would have led to is in another 24 hours that device just would have rebooted on its own, and folks would look and say, hey, let's try and look at some logs, let's try and decipher this and find out what's going on after the fact. And what we're able to do is find out and say, hey, this device here is already leaking memory, something ought to be done about it before we actually have that crash. So being able to do those sort of things without having anyone probe is kind of the first step. The second step is exactly that, is you end up getting some APM-type tools that will flood the network and cause some misbehaviors on that network and see how well the network deals with it. So we do both, is look at it kind of the beforehand and also look at it during the misbehaving applications.
Now, real quickly, you used a phrase that I think a lot of people hear often, but they're not real clear on what it means, and I was wondering if you could explain it in just some very simple detail. And that is memory leak. When you talked about a piece of gear having a memory leak in the stack, what exactly is a memory leak?
Well, maybe the best way to put that is, in lay terms, is if you're carrying a bucket of water and that bucket has a small hole in the bottom, and you figure, gee, this bucket of water, I'm going to need this water tomorrow. Well, if it has a small hole in the bottom, by the time tomorrow comes around, there's not going to be any water left in that bucket. And at that point, that water is not going to be usable by you. So it's the same sort of thing with a device, where if there is a misbehaving process on that device, that every 5 minutes it's gobbling up another 1 meg of RAM, eventually your device is going to say, gee, we're out of memory. There's no more memory to give. And at that point, a lot of times applications will crash, or maybe the whole box will just reboot.
And that similar behavior is why, even for, say, laptop computers that have sleep mode, you really need to reboot them every once in a while, because it's fairly easy to end up with a process that just nibbles away a little bit of memory at a time, but if you leave it on for, say, 2 weeks, suddenly you have no memory at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a comparison of a laptop versus a server, usually a server, you're not putting a lot of weird different little software in place. You have one application, and it'll tend to run for a good long time. But on a desktop, yeah, you've got all sorts of strange drivers and a whole bunch of different apps, and so, yeah, you could end up having a memory leak in one tiny little service. And you'll probably never find out which one it is until that reboot happens, and then you'll have to look for it. So if you could do pre-troubleshooting on that, you'd be ahead of the game.
It sounds like pre-troubleshooting is the sort of thing we really should have more of in sort of every corner of the computing world.
Sadly, yeah. I mean, it's in one sense, everyone talks and talks and talks about being proactive and saying, hey, we want to find and solve the problems before people complain. And at least my 26 years of history in the world of computing, it's rare that you get to work in that world, but that's where you want to be. And if you can be in that mode, you get to prevent the problems, and people sit there and say, gee, this network works perfectly. They never see the fact that you spent all the time up front making sure they wouldn't see the problems in the first place.
And for someone who was a misbehaving kid, the idea that you can go around breaking stuff and being paid for it is just about as good as it gets. I think it's one of those things that I've enjoyed in my career when I was doing product testing an awful lot. Here, let's break it and then tell people how we were naughty.
Well, it also, you find out, is what point does it break, which is a very valiant engineering of backing to that childish misbehavior. But it's, at what point will it break? And that's something that tends to be important on a lot of high-performing networks, where you need to know if you end up saying, gee, our company's selling $1 million worth of stuff, $5 million, $10 million, gee, your network might break when you have $20 million worth of orders come through. Your business guys ought to know that, so they can say, let's upgrade to a newer network by the time we hit $15 million of throughput on this network.
Gee, being prepared for success. Who can imagine such a crazy thing? Well, being ready for crazy things is a big piece of what we do here at Hot Stage, because we want to make sure that by the time we get to Interop and all of the thousands of attendees and all of the vendors out on the show floor, that the network's going to be ready to handle it. Tim's been talking about that. We have a lot of people doing a lot of different things, and we have another member of the InteropNet crew I wanted to introduce you to. This is Stuart Halen, who's going to tell you about one of those things that's easy to overlook in the preparation of a network, but oh so important when it comes time to telling exactly what was or was not going wrong. Here's Stuart Halen.
My name is Stuart Halen. I work for Cormint Incorporated, and I'm a senior technical consultant. Cormint is here to document all of the Layer 1 assets and connectivity, basically the physical web or physical kind of connections between everything that's here. So we're documenting, where everything is, how it's connected, how much it weighs, how much capacity there is, how much power it's drawing, and a few other things as well. We also help track the show floor deployment for the connectivity out to the booths for the customers. So that way, if a customer has a problem, we can we have a record set that people could use to solve that issue and understand what the physical connectivity looks like between the NOC and out on the show floor. This is actually my fifth InteropNet, I believe. We've pretty much always done this exact thing. So what we've done over the years is help improve the show floor deployment process to make it more accurate. So in the past, there have been issues where the riggers would drop cables from the biscuits in the ceiling, but they wouldn't have any idea that a port on that particular biscuit was bad. So we've provided records so that they can avoid that and avoid a lot of the rework that goes into that. But we've pretty much functionally done the same thing. We have increased the scope of what we do by doing live power and temperature monitoring for the racks, as well as humidity and some other environmental pieces of data as well. Sure. My experience has always been a positive one. You know, as kind of a physical layer one guy, it's always really impressive to see what people can throw together in just a couple of short weeks, and the amount of intelligent and hardworking people that are here is always, really reassuring and also very impressive as well. So had a really great experience in the past, and this is no different. This experience is a little bit different for us because we brought some new employees who haven't really been out in the field very much. They're actually developers of the software, and so this is giving them real hands-on experience in how people use our software and some of the trials and tribulations that people go through in trying to track some of the cable mess out there. Favorite part is definitely seeing the diversity of companies that come to participate and understanding new technologies that people are using in the data center or outside of the data center, just in networks in general. I think that's probably my favorite part.
One of the things I absolutely love is hearing our various volunteers and the people on the team talk about their favorite part, because it's a mix. Most people at some point will mention the mix of people who are here at Hot Stage. It is an astounding collection of expertise, talent, and knowledge that we have around the tables here. But for most of us as well, just the ability to come in and geek out over the equipment. Most of the time when we're sitting down at a network, putting them together, we're worried about the applications, and we're worried about the users. We're worried about all of the things around the perimeter of the network. And we don't really get to enjoy the network and the technology for its own sake. And so it's kind of pleasant to be able to deeply dive into the network from layer one up and just enjoy it. And Tim, he was talking about the first layer in the whole ISO OSI stack, the physical layer, and those cables and the importance of keeping them labeled. It can be amazing how a seemingly small thing like that can be so very important.
Yeah, I'll say is that when I, many years ago, when I was working as an IT director, the first thing I did is came into a company and said, okay, I want to see the physical cable plant. I want to see how well documented that is, because if that's not well documented and that fails, you're in trouble, because you can't fix a layer one issue if you don't know where the cables go. And so that's where Cormorant is doing a fantastic job at covering that base. Interesting new feature that we've added to Path Solutions TotalView is to take that layer one Cormorant mapping capability to the next step and say, here's how that maps to layer two. And we have all of the switches. We're pulling the bridge tables off it so we can tell what MAC addresses exist at the far end. We're getting LLDP information now with our latest release, so we can actually tell you, here is the make and model of the device that's plugged into that far end, so that you're able to do that translation from layer one to layer two and on through layer three to say, here's how this connects through this environment. So I always find it exciting to see, what does one company's technology do and how does that end up connecting into the next company's technology to say, here's where the handoff is, so that you can say, they're doing the documentation at layer one. We're connecting that layer one information to layer two and layer three, and then you could use an application performance monitoring solution on top of us to say, here's the end user experience. And at that point, you've got everything mapped out saying, I have full visibility into this environment. And that's just exciting when you see all of the different steps and pieces connected to each other and say, this is how you run a network.
And, you know, it's interesting for me to hear you talk about that, because normally when we're talking about products interoperating, we're talking about complex systems who are interoperating based on complex published standards. And we have lots of interesting arguments and debates over those standards. That's not really the level of interconnection that you're and interoperability that you're talking about, because when you think about it, other than knowing perhaps what kind of format a file is going to be in that you're going to take, you don't have to, you know, go deeply into the networking stack to make sure that you can get the information from a different vendor and pass it on to somebody else. The different definitions of interoperability and the different ways in which systems can interoperate are just part of what makes this a fascinating process for me.
Yeah, I see it the exact same way. It's because you can have a huge set of standards, but how does that play in the real world? And it's always that, you know, slight differentiation where the standards folks said this, but in the real world, this is what you need. You need to know, how do those cables connect? What's connected at the end of the cable? How does that affect which direction the packets go in the network? Do the packets get to their destination, or do they get dropped somewhere in the middle? And what does that mean for the user? I find that fascinating, how you can end up, and usually it's at each of these interops that we find out, here's how the dots all connect.
Connecting the dots is one of those things that that people do talk about a lot. And one of the people we've already heard from today, Jeff Blyther, his company, Lantronics, deals with allowing people to see what's going on in the individual pieces of the network. Now, we're going to hear from him a little bit more about precisely how they do that. And again, this is one of those areas that can seem very boring, very mundane, and yet it is absolutely critical when you are setting up, configuring, and managing a network. Things like consoles, things like the keyboard, the video, the mouse, all of those little pieces have to come together to let someone look at what's going on in the appliance and deal with it. So let's hear from Jeff Blyther talking a bit about what Lantronics is doing in the InteropNet and the SDN lab. I'm here with Jeff Blyther, Senior Field Application Engineer with Lantronics. Now, Jeff, tell me a little bit about what Lantronics is bringing to the InteropNet and to the SDN lab.
Sure. So we have our SLC-8000, which is a console manager. What this allows is for remote access to all the servers, all the storage devices, all the VMware. It allows remote access to those console ports on these servers. A console port is really nothing more than a serial port. But there's critical data that comes out of that serial port, and system administrators in general, and certainly everybody here, wants to see what's coming out of those ports. Could be a kernel panic, could be some messaging that they can't really get from the network side of things. So system administrators in general really want access to those console ports. So what we're doing here today is we brought our console manager, and we're hooking up all the console ports to all the infrastructure gear, particularly in the VM servers as well as the storage devices. Now, what makes our SLC a little bit unique in the industry is our modular port design on the back, meaning those serial ports or console ports can actually be slid out of the chassis 16 ports at a time. So you can slide those ports out and then slide in USB ports, because many of the vendors out here now offer USB as their console port. Why is that? Well, because oftentimes they walk up to these servers with a laptop and they want to connect to that console and they want to be able to read the information coming off of that console. However, you'll notice that on most laptops now we don't have RS-232 serial ports anymore. We have USB.
Right. I can't remember the last time I went out and bought a laptop that had one of the 9-pin, or the DB9 RS-232 ports on it. I don't even know where I would look for a laptop like that these days.
Right, right. In fact, they make these little dongles that goes to USB to DB9 if you really did need to make a DB9 connection to something. But those aren't so reliable, and it's another level of complexity trying to get, to talk to some device. So we thought it made sense to come out with USB console ports or device ports to connect to USB natively right to a USB console port on a server or an infrastructure gear. And the market seems to have, agreed with us on our decision to do that.
Now I have to ask, I know when I was doing a lot of configuration a number of years ago, one of the things that you had to do when I did have a laptop that had my DB9 port on it was it seemed like every time I went to a new device, I would plug it into the device, and then I would have to set my baud rate, I would have to set duplex. There are a whole lot of setup components that I would have to go through, and they were all slightly different from device to device. Does a console manager like you're talking about, is it one of those things where you can set it up once through the console manager and then you just have one standard way of connecting to the console manager so you don't have to do that reconfiguration every time you switch between devices that you're trying to look at?
Correct. So it goes anywhere from 8 to 48 ports. So yeah, the configuration happens all at once. You connect everything you want to get console-level access to, make sure the configuration is correct, it's stored, it's saved, and then furthermore, you would never have to do that again. The good news is that most everybody kind of plays by the same rules. So, baud rates are 9600, 8-9-1, no flow control, and that's pretty standard. So that's our default, and 9 times out of 10, you connect straight up to the console and immediately get access.
Outstanding. Now, you're talking about console access, and I've got to admit, I've been curious. It seems to me that with the rest of the world going in the direction of USB, that it would make sense for the device manufacturers to switch away from that classic 9-pin serial port to USB as well. Is that something that you're starting to see in the industry, or are network appliances going to be the last holdout for the classic DB9 connector and RS-232?
Well, in this industry, yeah, we're moving away from that classic RS-232 serial port. Now, it's not DB9 so much anymore. It's RJ45. So it looks like a network port, however, it's a serial port. What we're seeing a lot of is the RJ45 serial port. It's listed as console on the back of a device. Right next to it is a USB port. What the vendors or manufacturers are trying to do is offer you either or. If you prefer USB, we have it for you. If you prefer RJ45 serial, we have it for you. What we're now seeing, effective this year really, is the removal of those RJ45 serial ports and just offering USB as console-level access.
Okay. Now, with your devices, do you also offer an IP front end so that someone in another part of the building, in a control facility, could use the standard IP network to get to the console device and look at things that way? Or does this tend to be an entirely separate control mechanism where you've got the serial side, you've got the network side, and never the twain shall meet?
So our box is for that very purpose. It's allowing you remote access to those USB console ports. Okay. We take care of that magic in the middle. So you can literally Telnet or SSH or raw TCP connect through our box right to one of our device ports, right into the console port of your device. That's the whole concept. So it's kind of a lights-out approach. If you're in a data center environment and you're in a lights-out data center, you don't normally go in there, you still need to get this, you know, remote access to these console ports.
Right.
And it would require a console manager like ours in order to make that happen.
Okay. And so I assume that with that being the case, that even we're talking about a lights-out data center, that means that you could do it very remotely. You could come in as long as you have a publicly accessible IP address somewhere on the front end of that, you can get into it from a distant location.
Correct. And beyond that, we also, or many, I'll say many system administrators look at this technology as an out-of-band management solution. So normally, you're going to connect over the network to get access to these console ports. What if the entire network goes down? It would sure be nice to be able to connect to those console ports, you know, go into those machines, bring them down gently, you know, while we're trying to get the network back up. We offer a standard POTS line modem inside of our box. Okay, so if the network goes down, you can still dial up and get access to those console ports. Now, what we're seeing a shift in is a lot of data centers no longer even have an analog line inside the data center. So what do you do now? Well, we have a cellular solution.
Okay.
So we have a box that connects up to our console port on our console manager and allows cellular access through our box into your console port. So now you have cellular access, you have POTS line access, and you have regular traditional IP connectivity through the console manager to get access to your console port.
So I suppose the only challenge in that point is taking that laptop that no longer has a serial port and finding one that does have a modem.
Exactly, right. Yeah, in the case of a POTS line, right. Right.
But I think we now know the reason why every large data operation has one 10-year-old laptop that has both serial ports and dial-up modems installed so that they can use it as the tool of last resort to reach the out-of-band management systems.
Correct.
Now, I know that Lantronix is being part of both the production InteropNet network and the SDN lab. Are you doing anything different for those two sides of what's going on at Interop, or are you providing pretty much the same capabilities for both the production and the laboratory side?
I would say for console manager, we're providing the same level of capability for both sides. Something else that we're doing here on Interop, though, is also giving KVM over IP connectivity to these devices as well. So in the case of servers or storage devices or VM servers, they also have standard video, keyboard, and mouse connectivity on the back of these devices. Okay, so we have what is called our Spider. The Spider gives you KVM, keyboard, video, and mouse connectivity, so like desktop control over IP. Okay, you're probably familiar with remote desktop type connections to a remote computer.
RDP kind of thing.
RDP, right. So that is actually from your computer looking at the desktop of another computer. It's the same concept. Open up your browser, insert an IP address, click on a button, and now you have remote desktop control from to your, you know, let's say your VM server, as if you were standing right there next to it in the rack.
But I assume there are some advantages in performance and other areas for being able to do that directly through the ports, the native ports for the keyboard, video, and mouse, rather than having to go through that RDP process to come in through that particular stack.
You're exactly right. One of the key features is the Spider actually connects up via USB and video to the back of a remote computer, and by virtue of that USB connection, it powers up the Spider. Now, the nice thing about powering up, having the fighter powered up along with the server is if the server is bounced or goes down and you have to get to the BIOS level, those USB ports are still offered power at the BIOS level of most computers, and so the Spider is still available. So now you have BIOS level access, which RDP wouldn't allow.
Very good. So much deeper levels of control and availability than you could get via RDP.
Correct. Correct.
Outstanding. Well, now, how has the integration gone? I've seen you. You've been sitting across the table from me for the past few days. I know a lot of the people here at HotStage are in the latter processes of their installation. How about Lantronics? Are you getting towards the end of your process? Are things starting to be at the buttoning up stage for you?
Starting to get there. Yeah, so we've actually had to rely on everybody to install their gear so then we can come behind them and offer console-level access or KVM access. So that's why we delayed our installation until later this week, because we wanted to make sure everybody had all their gear connected up. So as everybody is finishing up their work and installing their gear, I'm starting to wrap things up now. I shouldn't be here much more than another day or so.
Outstanding. And I know that there are many companies that are doing, you know, bits of education and or training in Las Vegas at Interop. Do you know if Lantronic is going to be doing anything like that?
Yeah, there's a series of classes offered to the collaborative group here of the HotStage, and Lantronix is participating in that educational environment. So we're going to hold a class on exactly, kind of as our conversation is here, what are our console managers doing here and how do they differentiate themselves from other technology, and what exactly our KVM devices are doing for the lab here.
We'll look forward to that. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for taking time out of a busy schedule to be with us today.
Thank you, Kurt. It was my pleasure.
You know, it's very interesting to me that there really aren't any unimportant parts of the Interop Net, and everyone is going to have a chance to learn more about those bits and pieces at Interop. That's a big part of what Interop is about, not only in the conference, but in the various sessions and theaters that occur out on the show floor. And Tim, now Path Solutions is going to have something going on out in one of those theaters, aren't they?
Yeah, actually we have two speaking slots that you can join us in to learn about our root cause troubleshooting capability for InteropNet. They're both on Wednesday. One's in the Knock Theater, so if you check the Knock Theater schedule on Wednesday of the show, I believe it's at 1:30. Don't hold me to it, but that's on how we end up supporting the NOC. And then at I think it's 2:45. I think we have a speaking session talking about just root cause troubleshooting, best practices, procedures, and tool selection, so that you can end up getting problems solved a lot faster. So we kind of have two different slots we can help inform and educate folks.
We will absolutely look for that, and there will be big signs up at Interop when you get there talking about the different times and who's talking when, so you'll be able to confirm that when you get to Interop. You'll also be able to hear more about this, and I'm sure that Tim will have it confirmed by the time we get to April 14th, which is when he's going to be our real formal guest on Interop Radio. He's going to be half of what will be a superb show on the 14th. We know everyone is going to want to listen to that.
Yeah, definitely. And because it's formal, I'm going to be wearing a suit.
Ooh, we'll look forward to that, Tim in a suit. Now, Tim, we know that we've got to get out of here because we've actually run long today, but real quickly, can you tell people how they can follow you on the social media? How can people keep up with your thoughts and wisdom out there?
So they can follow us at gopathsolutions.com, or they can go to www.pathsolutions.com, our website, and at the top upper right, there's all of our social media links up there.
We will look forward to following you, keeping up with all of your wisdom about the network and other things. Well, thanks so much for being with us. This has been a great episode, I think, and I hope that you agree. Now, if you're here with us live, you know that we've been enjoying the chat. If you're listening to us on demand or in a podcast, We hope that you will join us live. We've got two more episodes of the Hot Stage Diaries coming up. That's tomorrow, April 2nd, and Friday, April 3rd, both of those happening 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. Then next week, we have another great episode of Interop Radio happening. I have some folks from NEC Alcatel-Lucent who are going to be showing up talking about what they're doing at InteropNet. And we have a panel on how to manage using great content. It's just building better and better as we get towards Interop. Now, we know that Interop is going to be happening the last week of April in the beautiful, glamorous Mandalay Bay Convention Center in scenic Las Vegas, Nevada. For more information and to register, go to www.interop.com and be sure to use that promo code RADIO to save big on your full conference pass. Well, for everyone here at Interop Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we will see you in the diary tomorrow.